Let's zoom in. Lindsay Dalt. Now, joining us in the Victoria Rumble Room, Lindsay Dalt, the owner of Country Honeybee. First time on this show. But we've spoken before, Lindsay, a ton on podcasts, helping to promote island products and produce.
Awesome.
Great that you can join us. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Oh, totally. Lindsay, I was wondering about the state, we're all wondering, but the state of local farming in general, and your business in particular, as we clear out of the pandemic, okay, and deal with these wild changes in the climate. Okay. Mm-hmm. First, is your business back to what it was before the pandemic? And how is business, you know, generally speaking, well, not generally speaking, I think you're the only one who is producing honey and eggs together.
Through the pandemic, we actually did quite well because people were stuck here with nothing to do. So it kind of forced people to find local, you know, what can they see in their community? And so it actually kind of helped us in a way and didn't really hinder us. I mean, everybody was affected, but our sales actually went up through COVID because people were stuck here and it kind of got our name out more so than anything. So it wasn't terrible for us. We did see, like, this year we saw a bit of decline in sales. I think as things changed in the housing market, people got a little tighter with their pocketbooks, and that we saw sales decline quite a bit. And we're now still, our local sales are down. However, our sales within with tourism is getting much bigger, which is nice. That's growing. Yeah, that's grown quite a bit. So that's nice.
So, well, your proximity is so close to Butterfly World. You're just down the street from Butterfly World and the entrance to Bouchard Gardens. And yeah. I would imagine there's a lot of word of mouth in the community about not just your store, but you've got a petting zoo area and a walking path and all these things that people can bring their families out to. I had the pleasure of visiting your farm. And it was just great to see all the different things that you've done, a lot of work there. And mm-hmm. hopefully the local community really bolsters that, because you can't just depend on tourism for a farm that operates year round.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. We have we do have a lot of regulars that come in with their kids to go see the animals. That's kind of their outing. And they come in, they get a decorated cookie and they go down and see the animals and get a bag of food. So it's like, there is a lot of different walks of life walk through our front door for sure. Yeah.
And you have
to John's question though about climate change and mm-hmm. what's been going on with that. And I imagine you talk to other people in the farming community that are in different areas of the farming community, whether it's corn or produce or cows or sheep or whatever else. Yeah. We've had record drought. We've had extreme heat. We've had all these different movements in climate. Has it affected animals very much? Has it affected bees, for example? Has it affected industry? I mean, how have farms been coping with this new reality?
As far as, like, you know, we talk about climate change and the drought, I know that all the local farmers are challenged with getting enough water onto their fields. And there's different, changes in water rights and stuff like that are happening. And so that's really affecting lots of farms. But as far as, like, the actual climate change, we aren't able to irrigate our fields as much as we normally would. We plant 6 acres of wildflowers or sunflowers and buckwheat and all sorts of forage to feed our bees. But just getting water on that is tricky, and keeping the water on it, like, you'll water and it just doesn't penetrate into the soil because it's so hot and so dry, and all those factors definitely play a role. And I know that every single farmer out there is dealing with the same thing, where it's just harder to irrigate crops. But a funny thing happened this year with the bees, in that I managed them a little bit different than I normally would have. But the bees, I did an extraction middle of the summer, and then I put frames back in the hives, and the bees actually started collecting blackberry juice from the blackberries because there were no flowers with nectar. So we basically, like, when you think of a flower, it needs water to produce nectar. And if it doesn't get watered, it can't produce nectar. So the flowers don't have a lot of nectar for the bees. So the bees are getting desperate for where they're getting food from. And they started collecting the actual juice from blackberries and bringing it back into the frames. And I pull out frames from the hive and they're just full of red honey. So we started selling that as red honey. So we extracted those separately and we got a totally unique tasting honey that I have never seen before in any quantity. I would see a few cells in a hive and that was about it. And I would just eat them myself and not share them with anyone. But this was like a frames full. It was crazy. So that sort of thing, the bees and the bugs and all the animals have to kind of acclimatize to the changes that are happening and the lack of food that is out there, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's something that us sort of non-farmer guys would not even think about.
Yeah.
About how the whole ecosystem's interacting. I want to get us into the grocery stores. Okay, question about that. So these groceries that we are buying all the time, getting more expensive. And nothing seems to impact lower prices for these things. However, the extra money doesn't seem necessarily to be going into the pockets of the producers, big grocery chains like Sobeys and Weston's thriving. What's driving up the costs and why is food so expensive?
Well, I think labor costs have gone up, right? Like we saw an increase, I think it's like $1.50 on minimum wage this year or something like that. I don't even keep track anymore. So that's gone up. I think with COVID, we did see a huge influx in the price of stuff coming from China. So like, our glassware all gets made in China. That's where any glass that you have in your house that's like a jar from somewhere is probably from China. And the fees on shipping that stuff went up like astronomically over COVID.
If you're driving up the Pat Bay Highway, one of the beautiful things you can enjoy, especially if you're heading through central Saanich, are these beautiful farms. And you see Mitchell's Farm and they've got all the pumpkins out and it's so pretty, and they've got their store to buy corn and all this produce. And you would think from this bucolic image that so many people are out there taking full advantage of local produce. And yet I understand it only makes up about 6 or 7% of what people buy is commonly local.
Yeah.
And then it's still very hard for farmers, even with a fairly large piece of land, to really make very much money. And I've heard it anecdotally that some farms, the farmers will actually, because it cut costs, will just put hay on their farm rather than produce because it's just so expensive to operate a farm these days.
Yeah.
So the agricultural land reserve, it certainly kept all the housing out of central Saanich and along the various parts of the city where we have still a lot of farmland. But is it really allowing farmers to prosper? And is farming still a good business to be in?
Do you want me to answer that honestly? I would never encourage my kids to be farmers, which is sad. Like when my one kid said, I want to be a beekeeper, I was like, please don't. It is so, I know that we need people to make all this food, but it is so hard to make a living. Like for us, the price that we sell our honey at in our store of the honey that we produce here, we break even on. We don't make a profit on it. We cover our costs because it is so costly to produce honey here because we don't grow a lot of food here. So it's like, if you don't grow a lot of food, you don't get a lot of honey. So it like kind of goes hand in hand. But I think the challenges with farming now are just, they're massive. Like even now we have to get water rights for the land, the water that falls from the sky onto our farm, and we have to pay for that. So it's like adding more cost to farming and making it more expensive to try and make ends meet. So I think it's very challenging. And I mean, everything to do with pests and bugs and like dealing with all that is like, for us, we don't grow any like food crops on our farm. So like weeds, like we don't do Roundup or any of that stuff, but all the bugs that you encounter if you're growing food is another whole issue you have to deal with.
You and I've chatted about this multiple times in the past. Mm-hmm. There is a myth around the peninsula being a food sustainable source for the island. That in fact, if the island just broke off and started floating into the Pacific, we'd be okay because the peninsula can produce food for all of us. I think that's wrong. You've mentioned it's wrong. I think even Robin mentioned a lot of this land is hardly being produced for food. Is that still the case? And when is that going to change? There's a lot of land out there that could be utilized in maybe a more efficient manner.
Well, yeah, I think we would just squander away if our island floated off into the Pacific. I'd be fine. I got everything I need here. We raise all of our meat and do all that stuff. But I think the cost of farming and like the when people have these giant pieces of property and they want ALR status, so they don't pay all the taxes, they find what's the easiest way that I can get farm status. And that is to grow hay. So we have a plethora of hay on the peninsula and really not that many food crops that are growing. Like I don't think we'd be sustainable. There's a few key players like the Foxes, the Sluggets, the Mitchells, like all those guys that are producing a lot of food, but by no means is that sustainable for, you know, what everybody consumes. And I don't know when, like how that would change really. I just don't like where there needs to be some sort of motivation to get people to farm and grow food and so that we have a sustainable island, but we don't. Everything gets brought over here from the mainland or any, you know, Mexico, California.
Where they have giant farms. I mean, they've consolidated farms over the years in places like California, where the days of the family farmer are almost by the wayside. Now farms are massive, and they're a conglomeration of probably 100 farms now make up one.
Yeah. But I think you need that in order to actually make money. Like if you had, I think a farmer here, if you had a 10-acre farm, you would not be able to pay your mortgage on that house that you just bought. Like you would go into debt, and I know, or go bankrupt. And I know people that have done that where they're like, we're going to farm this land and we're going to pay our mortgage, and they go bankrupt. And that's like, I feel like food security should be one of our biggest worries and one of our biggest things that we focus on. Whereas there's a lot of other things that are more heavily focused on now, than, which seems crazy to me, but that's a whole different show.
I want to talk about labor before we let you go. You know, we hear more and more Spanish voices around Greater Victoria, because there's a lot of people here that have come to Victoria to work in our construction industry. And before that, breaking ground on this, were temporary workers to work in our fields, in our agriculture. We have a lot of people from Mexico and other places that have come to work in these industries because they so desperately need people. And some of these jobs or industries really are labor intensive still. I mean, maybe we have farm equipment, but you still need people to run it. I mean, is that a big problem for farms to be viable today, finding people that actually want to work for a farm?
Oh, for sure. And like, well, just trying to find people to work in general, like to get people to work in my store. Normally we have 6 to 9 staff. I have 3 right now. So I basically work I usually work 6 days a week. I try and get one day off. So I'm just like balancing, just trying, waiting until my students that are working for me are out of school for Christmas so we can get through Christmas. And it's just I don't really know what's happened with people wanting to work anymore, but there is like, we do rely on out of country workers to come and do those jobs that apparently nobody here is willing to do. Like when I was younger, I picked garlic, I picked strawberries. I did all those jobs just to make money because that's what I did. And I guess my parents kind of forced me to do it. But I just don't think that mentality is a little bit different now.